just after 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that must mean it's time again for Money Management with Opus 111 Group's Mike Mayo. Here's Mike.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Money Management with Mike Mayo. This is Jim Harvey, president of Opus 111 Group. And today I'm sitting in for your regular host, Mike Mayo, who is a senior vice president of our firm and who oversees our Spokane branch. Just a reminder that if you have any specific questions you'd like us to address in future money management shows, please email them to info@opus111group.com, and we will either answer them directly or during next week's show. We also strongly encourage and invite you to visit our website for the latest on the markets, listen to our video and audio podcasts, and our perspectives on how you can manage your portfolio in a way that enhances your ability to achieve your financial goals. If you go to the Learn page, you'll find links to our latest podcasts, YouTube videos, and written and audio blogs concerning a whole host of topics we think you'll find useful as you navigate through these increasingly choppy economic and political waters in which we find ourselves. In a few minutes, I will review the week that was in the markets with some closing price and key market data on key indices after Friday's close. I will cover some key economic news for the past week. Then, after a commercial break, I will focus on three topics of interest based on what's going on right now that you might find interesting. Number one, what's happening with the U.S. Treasury bond market and foreign buyers seeming to abandon them? Number two, why we don't pay much attention to the S&P 500 as an important index to track your performance again. And finally, number three, Black Friday and Cyber Monday, the dramatic increase in online sales versus brick and mortar stores, and what that might mean to the retail real estate market now and in the future. Okay, so here's what happened for the week ending Friday, December 1st. The S&P closed at 45.94.63, up 19% for the year, and up 12.8% if we look back 1 year. The Dow closed at 36,245, up 9.5% for the year, and looking back, it's up 5.25%. The NASDAQ closed at 14,305, up 36, almost 37% for the year, and looking back 1 year, it's up 24.81%. The small cap stocks, the Russell 2000, closed at 18,6303, up 578 for the year. But actually, looking back a year, it's down 1.57%. The FTSE closed at 75,2935, down 2.2% for the year. And looking back a year, it's off 0.36%. The Nikkei Japanese stock index closed at 33,431.51. Up 28.7% for the year, and up 20% if we look back a year. Crude oil closed at 74.27, down 7.47% year-to-date, and off 8.57% looking back one full year. Gold closed at $2,091.30 an ounce, up 14.87% for the year, and looking back a year, it's up 16%. The 10-year Treasury, which had topped out at over 5% a few weeks ago, closed at a yield of 4.23%, which is an 18% rise for the year. And 1 year look back, it's up 20.54%. And then finally, the Chicago Board of Trade winter wheat closed at $6.03 a bushel, up 26 cents for the year. In economic news, the Fed's favorite gauge of inflation showed inflation rose 0.2% in October and 3.5% from a year ago, as expected. The personal consumption expenditures price index, excluding food and energy prices, rose 0.2%. That was in line with expectations. Personal income and spending both rose 0.2% on the month, also meeting estimates. Continuing unemployment claims surged to 1.93 million, an increase of 86,000 and the highest level since November of 2001. Headline inflation was flat on the month and at a 3% rate for a 12-month period. Energy prices fell 2.6% on the month, helping everyone at the gas pump. And it also helped keep overall inflation in check, even though food prices rose 0.2% as well. Overall goods saw a rise of 0.3%, while services rose 0.2%. On the service side, the biggest gainers were international travel, healthcare, and food services and accommodation. In goods, gasoline led the gainers. Bill Adams, chief economist at Comerica Bank, said the Fed is on hold for now, but their pivot to rate cuts is getting closer. Inflation is clearly slowing and the job market is softening faster than expected. Now, the markets have already been pricing in the likelihood that the Fed has done raising interest rates this cycle, along with signs of a loosening labor market, and the PCE reading could solidify that stance. New York Fed President John Williams said Thursday that he expects inflation to continue to drift lower, finally hitting the Fed's 2% target in 2025. However, he said policymakers need to stay vigilant and keep rates at a restricted level. The Fed funds rate, which is the central bank's benchmark level for short-term lending to member banks, is targeted in a range of between 5.25 and 5.5, its highest in more than 22 years. After implementing 11 hikes since March of 2022, the Fed skipped its last two meetings, and most policy makers of late have been indicating that they are content now to watch the impact of the previous increases work their way through the economy. Other economic signals lately have shown the economy to be in fairly good shape, though several Fed officials recently have said that the data doesn't square with comments they are hearing on the ground. Richmond Fed President Thomas Barkin said Wednesday, "I'm hearing consumers slowing down. I'm not hearing the consumer falling off the table. I'm hearing normalizing, not recession, but I am hearing consumers slowing down." U.S. GDP grew at 5.2% rate in the third quarter, even stronger than first indicated. The Commerce reported Wednesday that gross domestic product, a measure of all goods and services produced during the three-month period, accelerated at a 5.2% annualized pace. The department's second estimate showed the acceleration topped the initial 4.9% reading and was better than the 5% forecast from economists polled by Dow Jones. Primarily, the upward revision came from increases in non-residential fixed investment, which includes structures, equipment, and intellectual property. The category showed a rise of 1.3%, which is still marked a sharp downward shift from previous quarters. Government spending also helped boost the Q3 estimate, rising 5.5% for the July through September period. However, consumer spending saw a downward revision, now rising just 3.6% compared with a 4% initial estimate. There was some mixed news on the inflation front. The personal CE increased. However, the chain weighted price index increased 3.6%, a 0.1% movement upward. Corporate profits accelerated 4.3% during the period, up sharply from the 0.8% gain in the second quarter. And finally, Fed Chairman Powell calls talk of cutting rates premature and says more hikes could happen. He pushed back on market expectations for aggressive interest rate cuts ahead. I would tend to agree with him. I think it's premature to be thinking that the Fed, now that it stopped hiking, was going to immediately turn around and start cutting rates. Chairman Powell said it would be premature to conclude with confidence that we have achieved a sufficiently restrictive stance or to speculate on when policy might ease, he said in a speech. However, the remarks gave some credence to the idea that the Fed is at least done hiking, as the string of rate hikes since March of 2022 have cut into economic activity. Powell noted that inflation is, quote, moving in the right direction, unquote. Powell went on to say, quote, as the demand and supply related effects of the pandemic continue to unwind, uncertainty about the outlook for the economy is unusually elevated. Like most forecasters, my colleagues and I anticipate that growth in spending and output will slow over the next year as the effects of the pandemic and the reopening fade and as restrictive monetary policy weighs on aggregate demand. He went on to conclude, inflation is still running well above target, but it's moving in the right direction. So we think the right thing to be doing now is to be moving carefully, thinking carefully about how things are going on, letting the data tell us what the story is. The data will tell us whether we've done enough or whether we need to do more. The Fed's next meeting is December 12th, 13th. Okay, in this segment, I really want to talk a little bit about, you know, interest rates, but in particular, treasury bonds, because something is interesting going on right now with treasury bonds. Now, of course, we're entering the political season, so there's lots of nonsense on both sides. But, you know, there's no question our debt has never been bigger. With interest rates going up, it means that the Treasury is going to have to spend more on interest payments than they did for years when interest were 2%. And that's affecting things. But what we're seeing right now that I think is pretty interesting and that I wanted to spend some time talking about is the fact that foreign buyers right now, you know, if you listen to the headlines, oh my gosh, you know, foreign buyers desert U.S. Treasury bonds as market supply increases. And that's true. Foreign buyers of U.S. government debt are tending to dry up because they're looking for higher yields. But there are also other reasons why they're doing that. Data from the Treasury Department showed that foreign buyers, including central banks, financial institutions, and private investors, were net sellers to the tune of $1.7 billion in the month of September. The first time foreign investors were net sellers in more than 2 years. And while this is going on, foreign demand is dropping, supply is increasing. Now, one of the things that I have remained concerned about for a long time is the Federal Reserve balance sheet. Now, you know, in response to COVID and response to the credit crisis, the balance sheet, you know, exploded from $1 trillion to $5 trillion during the Obama, administration, then from 5 to almost 10 during the Trump administration, and they have to reduce that balance sheet in order to be in a position to respond to the next major crisis, whether it's a recession or a market-driven bubble or something. So as part of that program, they're trying to slim down their balance sheet, and they are basically effectively selling about $60 billion a month of treasuries for the most part. So the Treasury so far this year has issued about $2 trillion in new debt. And the foreign demand for treasuries has been most notably falling among the biggest historical buyers of them, China and Japan. Japanese ownership of treasuries fell by 6% over the year through August, according to data on the Treasury website, while the Chinese ownership has fallen 14% since August. The central banks of both countries often sell treasuries to buy domestic bonds to stabilize their currencies versus the dollar. So, you know, it's a good thing to have foreign support of U.S. treasuries, but they have their own economic issues to deal with, and quite frankly, currency risk and currency fluctuations are a thing. Add to that the fact that I personally do not trust any of the economic data coming out of China, because effectively their economy is sort of managed. Who knows? However, the yields on treasuries have remained historically high. If you look at the last 15 to 25 years, the 10-year yield, which recently hit 5, is still at 4.4%. And that's a very attractive low-risk alternative for investors. According to Mark Cabana, the rate strategist at Bank of America, quote, "The buyer of treasuries at this point is domestic asset managers, as overseas investors have better alternatives at home. In the future, the most likely source of treasury demand will be the Fed." Now, helping offset this decline in buying from Japan and China has been an increase in the petrodollar spending on treasuries from the Middle East and Latin America. Well, that's great, but, you know, it's still something. Now, you know, there are some pundits out there that see this as an opportunity to whip up people in a negative frenzy. There's a gal, Liz Hoffman, on Semaphore, who said, "Nobody wants U.S. Treasury bonds. Once a symbol of America's economic might and accepted as the global coin of the realm, They have fallen badly out of favor with serious consequences for taxpayers, investors, and financial markets. She goes on to say, you know, elementary economic forces, too much supply and not enough demand, have collided to create the worst stretch for U.S. government bonds since the Civil War. The government keeps borrowing to cover its budget deficits while the once reliable buyers of the debt, both at home and abroad, have pulled back. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Now, the hyperbole isn't. You know, clearly the government is borrowing more than expected, but that has to do with the fact that they're borrowing more and they're paying higher interest rate because our federal budget deficit is going up. And, you know, hey, here's a news alert. If you cut revenue in the form of taxes and increase spending, your deficit goes up. Wow. So, you know, okay, the Federal Reserve is selling down its own holdings, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the end is coming. Goldman Sachs' Jim Esposito said last week, there's just a lot less demand than there was even 6 months ago. You can buy a six-month T-bill that's yielding north of 5%. Why wouldn't you buy that instead of a long bond yielding 4.25% or 4.75%? Well, I'll give him the answer. Because there's something called interest rate reinvestment risk. And what that means is, sure, buy the six-month T-bill, you get 5% for 6 months. 6 months from now, maybe you get 3. A year from now, maybe you get 2 or 1. Who knows? Whereas if you can lock in a 4.75% rate for a 10-year period and you're willing to wait that out, well, then there you go. So, it's interesting when you see these kinds of, oh my gosh, the sky is falling kind of stuff. Just use your common sense a little bit, because things are never as bad as the media tries to make them out to be. So, keep that in mind as we look at interest rates. But, you know, it does raise a question, and I'm getting that question quite a number of times recently with our meetings with clients, where they're going, wow, you know, bond interest is way up, and shouldn't I buy a 2-year bond? And I've got a CD coming due, and shouldn't I renew it? And I'm thinking that, you know, for a long time, the bond market, and I mean a long time, I'm talking about for probably the last 20 years, bond market hasn't really done a whole heck of a lot, certainly since the credit crisis. So we are now actually seeing the bond market go back up to interest rate levels that are considered more normal. So this isn't the time to panic. I also don't think this is the time to jump at short-term yields, because you can actually get a pretty good longer-term yield if you buy a bond out, you know, say 7 to 12 to 15 years, and you can lock in a rate that, has a decent cash flow, and maybe you're buying it at a discount, and it matures at a higher value at par. So there are lots of opportunities out there. I wouldn't get hoodwinked or dissuaded or distracted by people screaming from the tallest yardarm in the fleet. But, you know, the fact is that, yeah, there's more pressure on treasuries, but don't think for a minute that Ms. Hoffman is correct, that, oh my gosh, we're no longer the global coin of the realm. There are lots of reasons why foreign countries like China and Japan are pulling back on their purchases of treasuries. And just because that's the case doesn't mean there aren't other people, other parts of the market ready, willing, and able to step in. Now, I want to talk about, we just went through Black Friday, Cyber Monday. I mean, all these terms are pretty interesting. I remember when my kids were small, you know, there was no black anything. It was just, well, it was Black Friday, but you had to go out and brave the stores and the traffic and all that. On Black Friday this year, shoppers spent a record $9.8 billion in online sales, up 7.5% from last year. In Cyber Monday, they're saying that the total was $12.4 billion. That was up 9.6% from the year before. So that's pretty amazing. Now, of course, after Cyber Monday, sales will likely taper off during the rest of the holiday season. But one of the interesting statistics that I thought was worth mentioning is that We've now seen a significant increase in impulse purchases. And what they're saying is of the $9.8 billion that people spent on Black Friday, $5.3 billion of it was from mobile shopping, mobile devices. There's a guy from Adobe Digital Insights, Vivek Pandya, who said, quote, "We've seen a very strategic consumer emerge over the past year where they're really trying to take advantage of these marquee days so that they can maximize on the discounts. And Black Friday spending spike reflects a consumer is more willing to spend than in 2022 when gas and food prices were painfully high." Pandya also went on to note that influencers and social media advertising has made it easier for consumers to get comfortable spending on their mobile devices. Still, shoppers are price sensitive, maintaining tighter budgets due to last year's record inflation and interest rates. According to the Adobe survey, $79 million of the sales came from consumers who opted for the buy now, pay later flexible payment method to stretch their wallets, up 47% from last year. Now, it's sort of interesting to break it down a little bit more. For example, demand was really spiked in key categories. Apparel on Cyber Monday sales were 189% higher than the average day in October of 2023. Appliances up 166%. Toys up 140%. Furniture up 12%. Electronics up 103%. Jewelry up 99%. And sporting goods up 95%. Now, in terms of Cyber Monday itself, the online discounts were also different, where online retailers were really trying to drive more traffic and more purchases. For example, in electronics this year, the average discount was 31% versus 25% in 2022. Computers, 24% versus 20% in 2022. Televisions, 19% versus 17% last year. Apparel, 23% versus 18% last year. Sporting goods, 15% versus 10% last year. Furniture, 21% versus 8% last year. And appliances, 18% versus 16% last year. According to the Adobe study, the best-selling categories in Black Friday were electronics like smartwatches and TVs, along with toys and gaming. Meanwhile, home repair tools underperformed. And Adobe, it's interesting, Adobe gathers its data by analyzing a trillion visits to U.S. retail websites, 18 product categories, and 100 million unique items. However, it does not track brick-and-mortar retail transactions. A Mastercard analyst of this year's Black Friday sales found that in-store sales rose up about 1% versus online sales, which grew by over 8% versus last year. According to Pandya, "I do think the paradigm has changed around the in-store Black Friday experience, the long lines and things like that." He said, "Consumers are more in the driver's seat when they are online shopping," he added, "because it's easier to make side-by-side price comparisons and secure a better price." However, RetailNext, which is the leading in-store traffic analytics provider used by 450 of the world's most popular retail brands, announced initial insights from Black Friday. Retailers saw a pop in foot traffic of 2%, and health and beauty brands saw the most significant increase with a 13% jump, followed by jewelry brands, which experienced a nearly 7% jump. Retailers, on average, saw a 1.6% increase on Black Friday and the following Saturday. Now, retailers are aware of the rise of deal hunting consumers and want to capture as many of them as possible. Companies like Best Buy, Lowe's have both announced higher discounting levels. Other retailers like Target and Ultra Beauty have rolled out pop-up promotions that offer 24-hour discounts on certain brands and items. Black Friday kept the momentum going from the day before Thanksgiving, when online sales totaled $5.6 billion. So it's not just Black Friday and Cyber Monday anymore. It's now the day before Thanksgiving. Adobe expects the spending strength to hold over the weekend and through Cyber Monday, of course, as it did, with the biggest brands still ahead. The report forecasts that online shoppers will spend roughly $10 billion over the course of the weekend, and then an additional $12 billion is what they spent on Cyber Monday. But spending will likely begin to taper off deeper into the holiday season, according to Pandia. Cyber Monday, as the last major deal of the holiday season, would be the final spike on that. Now, they do expect growth to weaken because those discounts will disappear or get less attractive over time. He noted that there are always gift givers who procrastinate their holiday shopping, so spending could continue to trickle into late December. But the real growth surges, he says, end up being in November and Thanksgiving week. So I think we live in a different retail world than we did even 10 years ago. And that's evident every time you drive by any kind of a major mall these days. I mean, there are all kinds of empty stores and big box stores that are disappearing because, frankly, people are more comfortable. And because of COVID, I think people have gotten very much more comfortable with spending their money online as opposed to, going out and fighting the crowds and dealing with all that. But the implications of that obviously have profound impacts on real estate, and in particular in terms of online or brick and mortar stores. And I think that'll be something to watch as we move forward with the recovery from the COVID period, and as inflation continues to rear its head, and all of that. So let's delve down a little bit more into the impact of online sales on retail space in the real estate market. I pay attention to a lot of stuff. I get a wonderful report from CBRE every year talking about the real estate market in general. They go over office, industrial logistics, multifamily, retail, and hotels. And they make an interesting point that even though we're running around seeing a lot of empty sp store spaces in places that we're not used to seeing them, the lack of building has really kept the retail sector pretty tight. And there is a rebound in brick and mortar retail sales, which they expect. I was looking at their mid-year review. They expect it to increase in 2023 and also in 2024. But obviously it's an interesting implication because you see the empty space, but because they're not building that much more, it really hasn't had that much of an effect as yet. All right, so in this segment I want to talk about we just went through Black Friday, Cyber Monday. I mean, all these terms are pretty interesting. I remember when my kids were small, there was no black anything. It was just, well, it was Black Friday, but you had to go out and brave the stores and the traffic and all that. On Black Friday this year, shoppers spent a record $9.8 billion in online sales, up 7.5% from last year. In Cyber Monday, they're saying that the total was $12.4 billion. That was up 9.6% from the year before. So that's pretty amazing. Now, of course, after Cyber Monday, sales will likely taper off during the rest of the holiday season. But one of the interesting statistics that I thought was worth mentioning is that we've now seen a significant increase in impulse purchases. And what they're saying is of the $9.8 billion that people spent on Black Friday, $5.3 billion of it was from mobile shopping, mobile devices. There's a guy from Adobe Digital Insights, Vivek Pandya, who said, quote, "We've seen a very strategic consumer emerge over the past year where they're really trying to take advantage of these marquee days so that they can maximize on the discounts. And Black Friday spending spike reflects a consumer is more willing to spend than in 2022 when gas and food prices were painfully high." Pandya also went on to note that influencers and social media advertising has made it easier for consumers to get comfortable spending on their mobile devices. Still, shoppers are price sensitive, maintaining tighter budgets due to last year's record inflation and interest rates. According to the Adobe survey, $79 million of the sales came from consumers who opted for the buy now, pay later flexible payment method to stretch their wallets, up 47% from last year. Now, it's sort of interesting to break it down a little bit more. For example, demand was really spiked in key categories. Apparel on Cyber Monday sales were 189% higher than the average day in October of 2023. Appliances up 166%. Toys up 140%. Furniture up 12%. Electronics up 103%. Jewelry up 99% and sporting goods up 95%. Now, in terms of Cyber Monday itself, the online discounts were also different, where online retailers were really trying to drive more traffic and more purchases. For example, in electronics this year, the average discount was 31% versus 25% in 2022. Computers, 24% versus 20% in 2022. Televisions, 19% versus 17% last year. Apparel, 23% versus 18% last year. Sporting goods, 15% versus 10% last year. Furniture, 21% versus 8% last year. And appliances, 18% versus 16% last year. According to the Adobe study, the best-selling categories in Black Friday were electronics like smartwatches and TVs, along with toys and gaming. Meanwhile, home repair tools underperformed. And Adobe, it's interesting, Adobe gathers its data by analyzing a trillion visits to U.S. retail websites, 18 product categories, and 100 million unique items. However, it does not track brick-and-mortar retail transactions. A MasterCard analyst of this year's Black Friday sales found that in-store sales rose up about 1% versus online sales, which grew by over 8% versus last year. According to Pandya, I do think the paradigm has changed around the in-store Black Friday experience, the long lines and things like that. He said, consumers are more in the driver's seat when they are online shopping, he added, because it's easier to make side-by-side price comparisons and secure a better price. However, Retail Next, which is the leading in-store traffic analytics provider used by 450 of the world's most popular retail brands, announced initial insights from Black Friday. Retailers saw a pop in foot traffic of 2%, and health and beauty brands saw the most significant increase with a 13% jump, followed by jewelry brands, which experienced a nearly 7% jump. Retailers on average saw a 1.6% increase on Black Friday and the following Saturday. Now, retailers are aware of the rise of deal hunting consumers and want to capture as many of them as possible. Companies like Best Buy, Lowe's have both announced higher discounting levels. Other retailers like Target and Ultra Beauty have rolled out pop-up promotions that offer 24-hour discounts on certain brands and items. Black Friday kept the momentum from going from the day before Thanksgiving, when online total sales totaled $5.6 billion. So it's not just Black Friday and Cyber Monday anymore. It's now the day before Thanksgiving. Adobe expects the spending strength to hold over the weekend and through Cyber Monday, of course, as it did, with the biggest brands still ahead. The report forecasts that online shoppers will spend roughly $10 billion over the course of the weekend, and then an additional $12 billion is what they spent on Cyber Monday. But spending will likely begin to taper off deeper into the holiday season. According to Pandya, Cyber Monday, as the last major deal of the holiday season, would be the final spike on that. Now, they do expect growth to weaken because those discounts will disappear or get less, you know, less attractive over time. He noted that there are always gift givers who procrastinate their holiday shopping, so spending could continue to trickle into late December. But the real growth surges, he says, end up being in November and Thanksgiving week. So I think we live in a different retail world than we did even 10 years ago. And that's evident every time you drive by any kind of a major mall these days. I mean, there are all kinds of empty stores and big box stores that are disappearing because, frankly, people are more comfortable. And because of COVID, I think people have gotten very much more comfortable with spending their money online, as opposed to, going out and fighting the crowds and dealing with all that. But the implications of that obviously have profound impacts on real estate, and in particular in terms of online or brick and mortar stores. And I think that'll be something to watch as we move forward with the recovery from the COVID period, and as inflation continues to rear its head, and all of that. So let's delve down a little bit more into the impact of online sales on retail space in the real estate market. I pay attention to a lot of stuff. I get a wonderful report from CBRE every year talking about the real estate market in general. They go over office, industrial, logistics, multifamily, retail, and hotels. And they make an interesting point that even though we're running around seeing a lot of empty store spaces in places that we're not used to seeing them, the lack of building has really kept the retail sector pretty tight. And there is a rebound in brick and mortar retail sales, which they expect. I was looking at their mid-year review. They expect it to increase in 2023 and also in 2024. But obviously it's an interesting implication, because you see the empty space, but because they're not building that much more, it really hasn't had that much of an effect as yet.
Well, that about wraps it up for me. Thanks for tuning in. If you have more questions or want to hear more about our perspective on things, I invite you to visit our website at opus111group.com. In particular, go to the Learn page, where you'll find written and video and audio blogs that you can take advantage of. And we'll see you next time.
Join us again next Saturday morning at this same time for the financial insight, opinion, and perspective of money management with Opus 111's Mike Nail. Have a question or comment? Email us at info@opus111group.com or visit our website, opus111group.com. Sections of this radio show contain forward-looking statements that are not guarantees of future performance. This information is from sources we believe to be reliable. However, we cannot guarantee that it is accurate or complete. These comments are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, nor as a recommendation to buy or sell any security or investment product mentioned in this show. Investing involves risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Individual circumstances do vary. Please consult an investment professional prior to making any investment decisions.